Accession number 30629, Squadron Leader Gordon Henderson, Real 2. Now, we're talking about your flying training on Mars Magister with number 5 EFTS at Mare in Staffordshire from September 41 to November 41. Now, we've sort of done a circuit and bump, and that's given us an idea of
it. Yeah.
And then they start to teach you the more, you know, when they
spinning. Well, and looping and that sort of thing.
Tell me about spinning, because spinning used to be a real fear.
Exactly. Absolutely petrified. Petrified the first time I spun. I'm sure I was.
Could you tell us what a spin is and how
An incipient spin in a glide turn. Incipient spin in a turn with insufficient power. Now, you just make me remember what the hell all that means.
What is a spin and how do you get out of it? Because that was a great secret and people had...
Well, I mean, to instruct, the instructor would say, right, we're now going to do a spin. He would have control. This was the first time. And you're flying along straight. You pick your nose up. You cut your power until you're almost stalling. And just before you start to stall, you kick on your left rudder or right rudder, whichever way you're planning to spin, pull the stick right back into your stomach, the nose comes down, and down you go, and you start spinning down to the ground. So the instructor would allow it to turn twice, and then he'd start to pull out of the spin. And what you do then, you've still, up till that point, you've still got your left foot hard on the rudder. You centralise the rudders, you centralise your stick, the spin stops, and then you pull your stick back, and you've recovered.
And how did you do first time? Do you remember it? Was it difficult?
The very first spin? Well, I think he probably helped me through it. I'm sure he did. I mean, he obviously did two or three of them to show me, and they said, right, now you try it.
When they do things like that, you know, if when he's showing you, could you feel the stick moving as he moves it?
Because you've got joint control.
And does your and the rubber stick move and run as his do?
Yes.
So you could feel what he was
doing? Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could keep your hand very lightly on the stick and your feet lightly on the rudder and follow his movements, and that's how you learned how to do it.
Any other, well, you mentioned before you did your first solo, would you do any other aerobatics
yes, you do a few loops here and there.
Tell me about the loop then.
Strength level climbing, gliding, stalling, taking off into the wind. Oh, a loop. Well, he would do the same thing. I mean, he would do it first. And all you do there is just a dive down and you get up to whatever the given speed was. And then you just pull up, cut the power and over you go. Keep everything level. Keep your rudders, your feet level. Pull the stick right back. Over you go. When you're coming down, put the stick forward. Take your power off. And recover.
So as long as you didn't do anything untoward to make you fall out of the loop, if you just kept your nerve and did it, it was easy enough. What about any other aerobatics at that stage? This is before your first
not in a Maggie, I don't think. I mean, with spins, you can recover a spin and go round the other way, and you can loop and when you roll off the top, that sort of thing. But I think at this stage,
you weren't doing rolls and barrel rolls.
No, it was a straightforward loop.
And how will you do it? I mean, how long was it before your first solo?
Well, I took... How long did I take? Well, I didn't go solo in England.
Oh, right. No, that's fine. Now, yeah. So you were just basically doing this course.
Yes.
How were you assessed? If you could... Because you were going up with Clark every day. Sergeant Clark, your instructor.
Yeah.
How was he assessing you? I mean, what was...
Well, he must have made his assessment to the flight commander, but to me, he would just say, oh, you did well, or you didn't do very well, or... he didn't sort of tell me on a day-to-day basis how I was doing particularly.
How did you feel you were doing?
I thought I was doing very well.
You were reasonably quick as far as you were concerned.
No, I wasn't, no.
Now, tell me about, what was slow then?
Going solo, you see.
was in America.
Was in America, yeah.
So what? That seems quite
and lovely. I had done what, hours? I had done... I can't see.
Well, we found that...
Oh, yes, that will...
You had the commander's test...
Yes.
...by Pilot Officer Plunkett on the October the 12th.
Right.
Which is, you know, when you've done about 15 hours.
Ah.
12 hours. And then your first solo, I've just found, is on October the 12th.
Oh.
So the same day you did your
that's
first
right.
solo. In the
yes, I would have a trip with him in the morning sort of thing. He would, yes, he would get out and say, right, off you go. Go and do a couple of circuits.
Now, what's the first? I mean, the first solo is often painted as a really big thing.
It is.
What was your?
Oh, it is. Well.
Were you nervous?
Yes. You were pleased that at last you'd got there because most, or quite a lot of the other characters on the course had already gone solo, you know, and had done it in 6 hours or 8 hours. And here was I, what was I, 10?
Well, it looks like 12
yeah.
hours. At the end of that day, you were 12 hours, so, and 5
well, that's
minutes.
A long time to go solo, I think. I didn't think so at the time. Yes, there it is. Bloody hell.
But that includes a solo flight.
It's only 15 minutes. It was probably one circuit. Yes.
Do you remember anything about it? Any problems, or was it just...
Well, no. Once I got in the air... It was brilliant. The feeling of being up there on your own is absolutely magnificent.
It is better, is it, than dual? I mean, as far as you're concerned. It was...
Oh, yes, I enjoy... Oh, yes. It's exhilarating. All the time you've been flying before, you've had somebody in the back, and you've had somebody there to correct anything that goes wrong, and you really rather feel, well, I'm all right, Jack, he's there. And when you go solo, you've got to do it all yourself. And it was a great feeling.
So you were responsible for your own fate?
Yes, it was brilliant.
No one could help you.
That's right.
Now, after that, you go back to Clark.
To more exercises.
A lot of duel, and then
yes.
the occasional 40-minute flight on your own.
Yep.
Probably carrying out the things you just learned.
A bit of
but
navigation,
maybe
yeah.
steep turns, things like that.
Yeah.
Some power, just the usual things that we've already discussed. Really.
Yes.
And that goes on then with you, Clark, till you leave there till November.
That's right. Well, then of course the weather was awful that winter.
Tell me
so
about the
all flying training stopped in this country.
What effect did weather have on them? I mean,
well, you couldn't fly, and especially in the Midlands, sort of round about Stoke-on-Trent. I mean, the weather was pretty bloody most of the time. And it was a bad winter, the winter of 41. And flying training just became non-existent. You couldn't fly. I mean, the cloud was too low, or it was bucketing with rain, or there was half a gale blowing, and a thing like a Maggie, you can't fly in severe weather conditions.
So what did they decide? What
so all flying training stopped, and we were sent to America.
Now, were you aware of this was going on? Did you see what I mean? I mean, how did they?
Well, no. We were just suddenly told the course is ending. There'll be no more flying here. All go off to what was the name of the place outside Manchester? A sort of holding area. A ground.
Hang on, I know this.
Ground place.
It's a park.
Trafford Park? No.
No. I know this. Oh,
yeah.
Hang on, I'll just have a look. No, it won't be in here. It's my new notebook. No, it's not in here.
It was where we were sent while we were waiting to be posted.
I should know. It's just gone out of my head as well.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the cataloguing so people know. So you went there in November.
Yep.
And anything happening there?
No, we sat around waiting for orders to embark. We went to Liverpool, got on a bloody old Norwegian meat tanker. Terrible, dreadful thing it was. And the thing was absolutely filled to the brim with us, with air crew. We were about 6 decks down below. We were all sick as dogs.
Do you know the name of the ship?
No, unfortunately. I wish I did. I wish I did. I don't remember. It was Norwegian.
And what were conditions like in a bit more detail? I mean, how bad?
Bloody awful. I mean, we slept on top of each other. You fed in turn, You know, the food was going on virtually all the time, and there were so many of us on board that you had to do it in one set of people after another. Very uncomfortable.
And this was November 41.
Yeah, very stormy. We landed on New Year's Eve at Halifax.
In Canada, well, Nova Scotia.
Which was brilliant. And all the WVS and people were there with cups of tea and all the rest of it. No, the reception over there, everything was lit up. You know, having left England and at night it was all dark and you couldn't use your lights here and all, you know, with the blackout. And you arrived in Canada and it was though there wasn't a war on. It was lovely.
Now, what happened that night? So you got there New Year's
Eve. We got there, we went to Halifax, we then went to the base camp, which was at Moncton. And we were at Moncton waiting for posting to the various flying schools.
So that's basically in January 42.
Yeah.
What was it like in Moncton? What's going on there? Or is nothing?
Well, it was heavy snow. It was bloody cold. And we just sat about. There was really nothing. We didn't do anything very much. We just waited to be posted. And then eventually the posting parade came along. And as you'll see in there, They just read out your names alphabetically. This lot are going here, this lot are here. And my lot were in Miami. And, of course, we all thought it was Miami, Oklahoma. And it wasn't. It was Miami, Florida.
It was Miami, Oklahoma. And that was, it looks like number 3, BFTS. Is that
That's
British
right.
Flying Trainers?
That's right. Yeah. Miami, Oklahoma.
And what was the journey like there? Because that in itself...
We went by train. 2 days, I think it took.
From what do you Moncton, remember of it?
From Moncton down via Chicago. Stopped in Chicago for 3 or 4 hours. A couple of hours anyway, because I remember 3 or 4 of us got off the train and we walked from the station to the nearest restaurant and had a meal. So there was time for that. Then back on another train down to Miami. Yes. It was a train, and of course, American trains are so comfortable and all the rest. Oh, it was an eye-opener. It was an eye-opener.
Now, so what happened when you got to the number 3 BFTS?
Well, we were met by the local station when we got there was crowded with the local populace, all of whom wanted to adopt one of us. They were very, very good. You know, they would come up and say, well, my lot were the Keithleys. Howard and Maxine Keithley took me to their... Well, they didn't take me immediately to their home, but they said, well, when you're off duty, our house is your house. Always come down when you feel like it. They were extremely hospitable.
So what did they offer you when you went round to their house?
Well, a meal or just chilling out or a drive in the country or go swimming. Just took part in whatever they were doing. They adopted you as... almost a family member.
Now, what was the setup at this Miami, Oklahoma?
Well, the BFTS, there was a wing commander, REF, and there was an adjutant, REF, and there was a warrant officer, gunnery, or armaments. And they were the only REF people there. The rest of the staff, the instructors, were American. All American instructors.
What did you think of them? You were used to an RAF.
Well, yes, but it was such a change. And, of course, the aircraft was different. But fortunately, the aircraft was what they called a PT-19, primary trainer 19A. Very, very similar to a Maggie.
And which make was it?
A PT-19.
It didn't have a Harvard?
No, I just knew it as a PT-19. The Harvard came next.
Okay. So... what were these instructors like? I mean, how did their manner...
Well, I had a fella called Stevenson. Short, dark-haired, very chummy. If he'd had a heavy night on the booze the night before, he was a bit surly the next day. But in the main, I got on with him pretty well.
And he was a civilian?
Yes, he was. They were civilian instructors. They weren't in the American Air Force, no. No, they were. That's right.
Now, It says in your notes, we're looking at actually, you did a short interview for Edward Smithies under the name of, well, he puts you under
yes,
the name of George Arthur. Page 258 in A.C. Zirks and Wagner Brothers. So we're using some of that to fill in.
Yes. Just,
but there's reference to their language, was seems to have been worse than the language you were used to.
He would get pretty shirty. Yeah, but I mean, deservedly. If I did something wrong, why not give me a rocket?
Now, tell me about the PT-19A then. What was that like to fly?
Very similar. In fact, I was very pleased to be on that rather than the other thing. I could have been on a Stearman, couldn't I, which would be like a tiger moth. But it may be that we were posted to Miami, Oklahoma, because they had PTs there and because we'd flown Maggies. If we'd had to start again and go down and get into a Stearman, it would have meant virtually starting from scratch in a completely different aeroplane. So I hadn't thought of that, but that's probably why we got posted to Miami, because of the aircraft. If the Air Ministry were wise enough to look that far ahead.
Now, how did the training go? I mean,
well, initially it was much the same to start with, you know, familiarisation of the controls. They naturally assumed that we knew something about it because we'd done 10 hours flying or 15 or whatever it was hours flying anyway.
So it was just continuation training.
Yeah, training. And starting from scratch. Familiarisation, spinning, tight turns, Lazy Eights, Chandelles. They had different names for the manoeuvres, really. A Lazy Eight and a Chandelle. You went down. You picked a road, say you were doing here. You were up here, and you had to go down, across that road at 45 degrees, up the other side, come back down, and cross it again, also at 45 degrees. So you had to, be able to calculate how much turn you had to do on your rudder and your stick.
And so you're just gradually gaining in these various exercises that you had to do. You did your first solo on that aircraft on 7th of February, but, I mean, it's not your first solid.
So no.
I see that's probably what caused the confusion last time. It's his first solo with that lot.
With that lot,
and gradually you're getting more and more flights, again, with your civilian instructor and yourself.
Yeah.
Almost alternate as I'm looking through into February and
yes.
It's just more and more of these things. Did you do ground training as well?
Oh, very much so, yes. The adjutant and the instructor, ground instructor, was a fella called Pittam, P-I-T-T-A-M, flight lieutenant. So he gave us our navigation. The gunnery, the warrant officer gave us all the armament stuff and gunnery.
Now let's do first. So navigation. What were you? How far did you? I mean, in a multi-engine, they can get quite complex navigational things. How much navigation were you doing, or was it just following the roads?
Well, that's the problem with American navigation, of course, because all the roads either go southwest, southeast, or north south. So all you did was get up in the air, find the road and follow the bloody thing. Whereas navigation over here, completely different. Navigation in America was easy, which is why they made a cock-up of so many things themselves when they came over here and bombed the wrong place, because their navigation was hopeless.
So what were you meant to, what methods were you meant to use of navigation as opposed to...
Well, you were meant to set your compass, and then after flying for a little while, you're supposed to take account of the wind. If the wind had taken you off, you then have to adjust your course. But frankly, navigation over there is so easy. It wasn't difficult.
Now, the other thing you mentioned was armaments. Tell me about, what were you learning about that?
Well, I think as far as that was concerned, we went out on the range. We had pistols. And he just generally spoke about armaments. We didn't have much in the way of instruction on it, but
you weren't trained on machine gun.
No,
or taking
no,
apart and
no, no.
Very basic.
Now, what was life like out there? Because it's
lovely. It was lovely.
In what way?
It was luxury. The food was brilliant. Of course, it was America. I mean, you just didn't go without anything. It really was 9 months or 8 months, however long it was, of absolute bliss. Miles away from the war, you heard vaguely about what was going on in the war, but you weren't involved, you didn't feel involved, and you just had a lovely time. When you weren't on duty, when you weren't flying, you were down in the town, and you were with the Keithleys or their friends, and oh, it was brilliant.
Did you go to bars, American bars?
No, Missouri's dry.
I didn't know that. Sorry, right.
Unfortunately.
Well, I thought it was Oklahoma.
Joplin is Oklahoma. Missouri is the next state just down the road, and that was wet. Missouri. It was Oklahoma that was dry.
Got it.
Yeah.
I just wondered what.
So if you wanted a drink, you had to cross the state line,
which was
no distance.
What was it like in American?
Excellent. Well, I just had a great time.
And you're making progress. I mean, there's a progress check in February.
Yes.
And it's just more and more of these exercises.
Yes.
I'm
gradually doing more and more solo stuff. And much the same, spinning, looping. Navigation was important from the point of view of their point of view, because they wanted you to get, and you had long distance flights.
It's cross country.
Cross country.
So what were they like?
Quite a lot of cross country.
What do you remember of
them? Did a bit of night flying too, if I remember rightly.
Think cross country first. So what
cross countries. Well, as I say, you'd need much more skill in this country to do a cross country than you would over there, because of the roads and so on.
So what would you go? Going to try? Would you have to go to certain places or what?
You'd have two points. You'd go from A to B, B to C, and then back to A.
So there's one here, Miami,
Tulsa,
Chautauqua, Baxter Springs, and then back to Miami, that kind of thing. So that's the sort of, and there's another one to Joplin, all sorts of things like that. So Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So those flights, no trouble with any of them.
No.
You mentioned night flying. What was that like? I mean, how did you take to that?
Yeah, I didn't take to that very well, I have to say.
Why? What was your problem?
Well, I don't know. I just didn't like flying at night. But you did it. I mean, you didn't like it. You didn't like it to start with. You weren't keen on it. But I mean, you had to do it. That was the next part of the course. So it was just, you know, you would do it.
And anything else new you were learning? Instrument flying. Is that where they cover the?
They cover the cockpit, and you take off on your instruments only. Yeah.
How did you find that?
Stressful. I didn't find instrument flying terribly easy, I have to say. I much preferred to be able to look out and see where the hell I was going.
Which is presumed.
Because you then have to trust your instruments, and that's the whole point. Either you trust your instruments and you don't. Because you sometimes feel when you're flying on instruments that you're not, in fact, flying straight and level. You feel as though you're either climbing or you're diving, so you adjust. And then you find that you've adjusted too much, and before you know where you are, you're in a dive, you're in a climb, and the instructor is thumping you on the back of the head and saying, bloody well, level off, or something like that.
And so it's the same kind of general unrest as night flying, because instrument flying,
yes.
That's what it's
about,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Same problem in a sense. Still carrying on, you're doing lots and lots of these exercises, following normal flying training program.
Yes, yes.
All navigation tests.
And it went on until when? Until August?
When did I leave? Yeah,
when did the course end? Must have been September?
I think it... I'm just looking. August. August. It says in this... Now, any stories? Did you have any casualties? Because I know it's peaceful.
What, in America?
But you can have people crash.
Yeah, one or two on the course, yeah. Somebody walked in front of an aircraft and got his head chopped off with a propeller, which was rather nasty. But apart from that, and two or three people were washed out, you know. If you didn't pass the flight commander's, Scarlatti was his name, if you didn't pass his test, you were washed out. And you were then sent up to Canada and transferred to either bombers or training command, but you got off
you were sent off this course. We had three or four washed out.
Because, but that's all.
Because they hadn't got through the course. I think there were 30 of us. I was number 7 course there, not number 1 course at VFTS. We were the 7th lot to go to that particular school.
Now, anything else you remember about your time out there? Just any stories that might give us an idea of what life was like?
Well, social life was brilliant.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, I had a girlfriend. Of course, we wore civvies. We weren't wearing uniform. The Americans weren't in the war.
Well,
were they?
Let's do that first, because in a sense, that's quite important.
Yeah, we were wearing civilian clothes.
Was that all the time?
No, we had uniform eventually.
But I mean, originally you would wear civilian clothes even when you were flying.
Oh no.
No, just when you were...
No, I've got that wrong, haven't I? They came in December 41,
yes.
Didn't they? No, of course we were.
No, right.
No, of course, that's balls. We were in uniform.
Okay. No,
because arriving in America, people you spoke to wondered what the hell, who you were. What's that uniform? Who are you? That's wrong.
They just come into the war.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, as you arrived.
Yeah, as we arrived.
No.
So they weren't aware of what the uniform looked like. And of course, that intrigued them. Socially, it was a great period.
You got on well with Americans, Jim?
Yes.
And there was no trouble or jealousy from them?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, I don't think so.
They made you welcome.
Yes, they certainly did.
Now, so towards the end of the course, we're getting towards August, because that's, you know, was there a final test?
What's that?
I can't see one. No.
I mean, well, Scarlatti would have done it if he had been.
Now, you're assessed as average flying ability, but and to the modern mind, that sounds not particularly impressive.
No,
in those days,
there he is, Scarlatti. Yeah.
Average would be what we now call good, if you see what I mean.
Yes, I suppose.
It meant you
were proficient in what they taught you, I suppose. You see, we're not flying, by now, we're flying Harvards.
Well, let's talk a bit about the pilot, about the Harvard.
Well, after the PT, you then went on to a BT-13, which is basic training, which is very similar to a Harvard 86, which is what the Harvard was.
So it's the BT-13?
The BT-13A, there it is.
And is that a Harvard?
Well, it looks very like a Harvard, yes. And it's heavy, very similar. When did I go on to that? There's the BT.
And what was that like to fly?
Well, it's quite different, and it was heavier, much faster, and it could have been used in combat. It was that sort of aircraft. It was there, BT. Then I had a change of instructor, of course. A transition from the PT to the BT.
And when did that occur?
That was in May.
May
the 4th. So we were on BTs. And then the ATs, BT, 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 AT, down here.
And what's the AT?
The AT is the Harvard, what we call the Harvard, the 86. And that was in June.
So it's just known as the 86, isn't it?
Yeah. In America, it's the 86, yeah.
Now, what did you think of that?
That was good.
In what way?
Well, it's again a bit heavier than the BT, faster, much noisier. I mean, when you hear a Harvard go round over from Elstree here, I mean, you know it's a Harvard. It's very, very noisy. Different controls insofar it had a pitch control as opposed to a throttle, or with a throttle. You had pitch and throttle. Much heavier on all the controls. And really, could have been an operational aircraft, the 86.
So all the time you're getting heavier,
you're getting heavier and faster. Yeah.
And anything else happened while you were out there before all of it?
Oh, I met various girlfriends, lost my virginity, of course. No, I had a bloody good time. What? Can I have a cup of coffee?